Welcome to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You know what I'm saying? I think you do.
Here's Cole Thompson.
And here we go. Welcome into Just Saying It right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Cole Thompson back in the driver's seat. Get you caught up on everything you might have missed through Monday's action. 800-224-2004. Call on the show. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you hate. Let's be real. You love everything about this show. And if you don't want to tell me via the text line, go ahead and give me a call at Mr. Cole Thompson on Twitter. Michael Hernandez on the other side of the glass producing. Quality planned hour ahead, Michael. We got a little bit of two-minute warning coming up in 6 minutes. MLB trade deadline predictions and also rumors swirling around as the final countdown has begun. Plus, two teams will decide their fate in the world of college football based off quarterback play. But before any of that, I start the hour off with this. I love the way that the San Francisco 49ers did the deal with Deebo Samuel. So for those of you who don't know, Deebo Samuel gets a brand new contract. It's 3 years worth, I believe, $79 million, $73 million, $58.1 million of it guaranteed. Now he's locked in through 2026, if I'm not mistaken. So he'll be a part of the long-term process now in the likes of San Francisco. But the incentives play in his favor. So one of the major reasons why Deebo Samuel wanted to be traded this offseason was he felt his role was way too expanded in Kyle Shanahan's offense. But if you look, the reason for his success, the reason why he's adapted extremely well to the NFL coming out of college and had a breakout year last year was because of that offense. Now, the term wide back is how he explained this is who he is as a player. And if he does finish the year with over, I believe it's 600 rushing yards and 7 rushing touchdowns, he'll get an extra $1.95 million to his contract per season. Now, that may not seem like a lot of money, but $2 million every year added to your contract is very, very monumental in guaranteed money. And the way that he was the most successful was playing in this style of offense, being utilized as a weapon, not as a receiver or as a running back. Bottom line, Deebo Samuel will take more money to play this role, and it ends up working out for San Francisco pretty well.
Time for the two-minute warning around the NFL. No. Here's Cole Thompson.
Each and every day at this time, we go around the NFL, breaking down some of the biggest storylines you might have missed, and we do so in 2 minutes or less, hence the reason we call it the two-minute warning. Oh, Michael! Start the clock.
A new addition to Dallas' receiving corps has run into some unfortunate luck. James Washington was carted off the practice field Monday after landing awkwardly on his foot, and further testing revealed a fractured fifth metatarsal, the team announced. Washington is expected to miss 6 to 10 weeks. Washington joined the Cowboys after spending his first 4 professional seasons in Pittsburgh, where he arrived as a second-round pick with moderate expectations. Washington's first season was underwhelming, but he broke out in year 2, catching 44 passes for 735 yards and 3 touchdowns. That was the most he'd do as a Steeler, falling behind the trio of teammates Juju Smith-Schuster, Deontay Johnson, and Chase Claypool, before quietly exiting the Steel City after his rookie deal expired. Washington found a new opportunity in Dallas, where the Cowboys spent some of the offseason attempting to restock their receivers room following the departures of Amari Cooper and Cedric Wilson.
It's bad. Like, don't get me wrong. It's bad when James Washington's out, but at the same time, I'm not that concerned. Apparently, according to reports, according to everyone out there, there is now prognosis and promise that potentially Michael Gallup plays after week 1. So he's not going to play in the week 1, the season opener, but he's coming off the torn ACL. There's a shot that he's available week 2. And if he's available week 2, well, then that gives you a 3-man rotation. It gives you CeeDee Lamb. It gives you your guy in Michael Gallup. and Jalen Tolbert, who is a really, really, really good vertical presence, physical receiver out of South Alabama that they drafted in the third round. The reality was is that Washington was going to be that number two receiver at the very start of the season because if you didn't have Gallup. And when he came back, when Gallup came back, Washington was going to move to the number four receiver spot. I think that by midseason, you were going to see Tolbert take that number three spot. So it could end up working. I heard rumors, you know, that, oh, they should go ahead and trade for, I mean, they should go ahead and sign Will Fuller. They should go ahead and add Odell Beckham Jr. I understand why you want to go that pathway. I have nothing against it, but Odell's not going to be ready until November. So how does that help your team? And I'm not sure Will Fuller is the best bet right now because he consistently finds himself either injured or getting in trouble with PED. So he's missing time every single season. It's just not worth the money that you're probably going to have to pay. I trust that Tolbert's going to eat. He's going to eat a lot very early on. And Michael Gallup will be back sooner than we expect. So add that all together. Is it a loss for James Washington? Absolutely. And it's very sad that Washington is not going to be able to finally maybe fit into a notion of being a very quality receiver, because when he was coming out of Oklahoma State, few and far were as talented as him. But I'm not really worried about adding in like a Cole Beasley or a Will Fuller or a T.Y. Hilton or one of these names that maybe isn't living up to certain standards, maybe no longer has that same juice, that same pop for millions of dollars of the penny. Because of, again, I think that Gallup's going to be back. I think Tolbert's going to have a really good year. CeeDee Lamb is going to be able to work it in some capacity very early on. I'm not worried. Not worried in the slightest.
Nothing else really needs to happen to Los Angeles Rams receiver Van Jefferson this year. The receiver broke 50 receptions for the first time in his young NFL career. He won a Super Bowl and raced to the hospital immediately after the game to tend his wife Samaria and welcome his second son into the world. Add surgery to that list. Jefferson suffered a little knee tweak and will undergo minor surgery to address the ailment, Rams coach Sean McVay told reporters Monday. The Rams expect Jefferson to return in a few weeks, McVay said, shortening Jefferson's preseason training availability but also putting him on track to potentially return for the start of the season. McVay described the pre-surgery feedback on Jefferson as positive news on Monday. Thanks to the departures of Robert Woods and Odell Beckham Jr., Jefferson is in line for a large role in his third season alongside Cooper Kupp and new addition Allen Robinson. He returns to an offense that largely looks familiar elsewhere, most importantly under center, which should aid him in mentally preparing while sidelined.
Starting off, good work day today. We got a day off tomorrow. A couple things I know you guys will be wondering about with Van Jefferson. Got a little knee tweak right there. He is going to get a minor surgery tomorrow. His timetable, you know, a few weeks, you know, we'll see what his availability looks like to start the season. But it was really positive news that we got on him. He's in good spirits. So we'll get his knee cleaned up tomorrow. And then, you know, I know he's going to attack the rehab the right way.
It stinks for a guy like Jefferson, who's coming off of a very good year. You were expecting him to take that role as the number three receiver. But at the same time, you know, most teams are very lucky to have a duo instead of a trio. Los Angeles is going to be okay. Like they are. They have Cooper Kupp. Is he not going to be the offensive player of the year? Perhaps. Is he going to finish with less than 1,800 receiving yards? Yeah, probably. But let me ask you this. When you look at the overall receiver play outside of Cooper Kupp last season, and with the injuries that came to Robert Woods, with the injuries that came to OBJ, with the inconsistencies from the other guys, wouldn't you rather have a guy like Cooper Kupp finish with 1,300 receiving yards, 12 touchdowns, and 100 catches, but then Allen Robinson, the number two, finish with like 65 receptions for like maybe 1,100 yards and 5 touchdowns? To me, that consistency factor of having two potential 1,000-yard receivers maybe outweighs having an offensive player of the year. And if you have that, you don't need a third receiver. Is it benefactory? Yeah, sure, absolutely. I think that there's no question you want to have a good number three receiver. But you don't need it. That's the main thing. Like, you can have it, but you don't need it. And then when you look at the other pieces that are on the roster with Tutu Atwell, Ben Shrunken is, I think, how you say his last name. They added in another receiver. I forget it. Jake Funk is another one that they have. who kind of plays that hybrid running back pass catcher role. They have in Tyler Higbee at the tight end position, Bryson Hopkins at the tight end position. They're going to be fine. Like Los Angeles, they're one of those few teams that when you break down on paper, you kind of just like can't feel bad for them. You feel bad for Jefferson because he's a really, really good player. But you don't feel bad for LA because, let's be real, they're not really missing much. And they're still the clear-cut favorite to be, I think, this year's Super Bowl champions, as well they should going into the season. Just works. I mean, like I feel bad for Jefferson. I don't feel bad for Los Angeles. They're going to be completely fine.
Chiefs left tackle Orlando Brown is reporting for duty as Kansas City prepares for its first padded practices of training camp. NFL Network insider Tom Pelissero reported that Brown will report to Chiefs camp Monday and play under the franchise tag, per a source informed of the plan. Brown had held out of the start of training camp after the sides couldn't agree on a long-term contract by the July 15th deadline for franchise tag players. By not signing the franchise tender, the left tackle wasn't subject to fines at the start of training camp. The Chiefs have been adamant they want Brown in town for the long term, and that didn't change with his brief holdout. While much was made of Brown's absence early in camp, the reality is he missed just 4 days of non-padded sessions. With the Chiefs set to put on the equipment beginning today, Brown determined he should be there as the blindside protector for Patrick Mahomes as the real practices ramp up.
When you get fine money talks, like plain and simple, because Orlando Brown, I think he really would have held out if he wasn't going to get fined. He wants to get paid top tier dollar. Like, he's made it abundantly clear. He is trying to make sure he gets paid every single bit of the penny. And I get it. I do. He's a very good player. I don't know how he's going to be at left tackle. We know what he is as an offensive tackle in general. And if you play him on the right side, you can make an argument that he is the best right tackle in the NFL. But he wants to get paid. I get it. Why wouldn't you want to get paid? You play in an organization and you play for a team like the Chiefs that have the funds. And not only do they have the funds, they also have the personnel to where you think that you're going to be part of the long-term process. You're going to be a part of the long-term build. I get it. I understand it. Money talks, though. And when you get fined and when you're starting to see, you know, every single week, all right, you're not coming in. All right, it's $10,000. All right, it's $15,000. All right, $25,000. You better get in. Like, you better get here. You better be starting to practice. It's one of those things where it's like, I guess I'm going to show up. That's the best way I can put it. He's going to get paid. If he has a really good year this year, he'll probably get over $100 million. If he doesn't, he'll probably get anywhere between $95 to $100 million. It'll be somewhere in that ballpark. But Kansas City knows what his value is. They know what his worth is. It's now just finding the common ground of what is the actual right payment for a player who has shown immense success as a right tackle and has shown promising results as a left tackle.
The Lions depth chart at wide receiver has a cut and dry top three with Amon-Ra St. Brown, free agent acquisition DJ Chark, and number 12 overall pick Jameson Williams when his ACL fully recovers. But that hasn't stopped head coach Dan Campbell from being bullish on wideout Josh Reynolds. Reynolds joined the Lions midway through 2021 after the Tennessee Titans released him. He amassed 19 receptions for 306 yards and 2 touchdowns in 7 games with the team. Beyond Reynolds' late season contributions, his rapport with Goff thanks to 4 years spent together in Los Angeles was likely a major factor in the team bringing him back on a 2-year deal.
Makes a big difference, and you know, you guys know the story on him. You just brought it up, but I would say this, man. He came in the spring in great shape, and I was pleased with what he was able to do and how he was able to help us towards the end of last year. But he came into this spring and caught my eye again, and I felt like he even took a step forward from there. And I like this guy. I'm kind of buying stock on him. I think he could have a big year. You know, he's a smooth athlete, and he's a grinder. He's smart, and Jared trusts him, you know. And so, look, I can't say enough about that room in general, and he's a big piece of that. But those guys are pros in there, man. They work, and they are smart. But I tell you what, he's different now. He's a different athlete. He's slippery, man. I call him the praying mantis.
I actually love Josh Reynolds. One thing that was really fun is I got to talk to him and hang out with him a lot down in the Senior Bowl back in 2018 when he got drafted by the Rams. And he's a really cool player. He's a really sweet kid. But the one thing that I like about him is that he's always been a consistent number four weapon along with Jared Goff. He had a breakout year in 2019 on the way to the Super Bowl with the organization, and he played phenomenal that season as that number four. He's going to be that number four again, because if you have Amon-Ra St. Brown, you have DJ Chark, who's going to be your vertical option, and you have Jameson Williams, who's going to be your speed threat across the middle of the field. So he's going to be your number four, but there is that consistent element factor that you have to love when a quarterback has that. And that's something that Jared Goff just automatically has. I've been very bullish on the Lions right now. And I'm not going to say that Detroit is going to finish with, you know, an 11-win team. But 8 wins is very plausible. 9 wins, if you can get really strong play from your offensive and defensive line, is very plausible. If your secondary can play very... significant's not a good word. I would say more so if you could play very consistent. That's probably a better word. It's possible. 11 wins is possible. There's some expectations this year for the Detroit Lions. As well, there should be. Me, personally, I don't view them as a playoff contender just yet. But if they do make the postseason, I'm not going to be that shocked. And neither should you, if we're being honest. They haven't. 2-minute warning. Right here, I'm just saying it. Progressive Insurance. What do your home and auto have in common? They're yours, and Progressive protects them both. Bundle today at Progressive.com.
This is Just Saying It on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
With their newest unlimited plan, everyone's welcome. Introducing Welcome Unlimited from Verizon for just $30 per line for up to 4 lines with auto pay plus tax and fees. Their best price unlimited plan ever. For real, $30 a line for the whole family, the network you want, the price you love. Switch to Verizon today. Paper-free billing required, unlimited 5G, nationwide 4G LTE. In times of congestion, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. All smartphone lines on the account must be on the Welcome Unlimited and are eligible for only select promotions, include domestic talk, text, and data usage only, data roaming at 2G speeds. So, the MLB trade deadline comes to a close in just a matter of hours, and what to make of those teams out there still looking to add talent, plus the teams that recently have added talent. So, let's start off with the first major name that got moved yesterday, Frankie Montas of the Oakland Athletics. And Lou Trevino, closing pitcher, head out to the Big Apple, now will join the New York Yankees in their quest to win the AL title. I love this deal for New York. I really think they needed a frontline starter to pair with Nestor Cortez and Gerrit Cole. Frankie Montas gives you that guy who can fill that number two void very well. He can fill that number three void essentially well. Lou Trevino can do a little bit of everything. He can be the setup man. He can come in the seventh. He can come in as a long-term reliever. He can close if you want him to. There's a lot to like about this for the New York Yankees. And they really did bolster their bullpen and their starting rotation going down the stretch. They should be the favorite already to win the AL East. This just solidifies their status. As for Oakland, I hate this deal for them. I really do. I thought they were going to add a lot more talent, especially guys who are higher up on the Yankees farm system, or really any farm system for that matter. But instead, they kind of just settle. And I think that you're starting to notice these teams having to settle because of the asking price for several high-profile stars really isn't at that same level as we thought it was going to be at the start of this entire process. Another team that added in a couple of players yesterday. I really like every single move, and apparently they're still not done. They're looking at it in the center fielder. Give it up for the Houston Astros. They added in a couple of monumental names that can be utilized in a bunch of different ways, and they didn't break the bank. This is a very good deal for Houston. It's an okay deal for all the other teams. So, Baltimore, Orioles, first baseman, designated hitter, Trey Mancini, arguably one of the best stories in baseball for the last 5 years, gets to come to Houston, but he's going to be able to fit in a variety of ways. He's played DH, he's played outfield, he's played first base. And you look at right now what the Astros are missing, It's just consistency in the lineup. They have Yordan Alvarez. He's filled in left field. He's filled in that he's filled in that designated hitter. They have a little bit of consistency when it comes to a guy like Yuli Gurriel, who I think still should be considered a starter or at least part of the starting lineup this season. But you can work it in a bunch of different ways. So you can have Yuli Gurriel move to designated hitter if you want. You can have Trey Mancini play first base. You then can have Yordan Alvarez play in left field. You could have Yordan Alvarez play DH. You could have Trey Mancini play in left field. Or you could have Yuli Gurriel play first base. Then, and this is another one, you could have Yuli Gurriel sit the bench when Michael Brantley comes back. Brantley plays left field. Yordan Alvarez plays DH. And then you have Trey Mancini go to first base. Then you could also have a variety of ways to where maybe Mancini only faces left-handed batters when he's at first base. Then you have Yuli only face right-handed batters at first base. But you're not taking really anything away from the consistency factor of a guy who has been essential to the team's success at first base with Yuli. And you didn't give up a lot of draft capital or a lot of prospects to go get a quality backup or at least fringe starter first baseman. They did the same thing with Christian Vasquez, the catcher from Boston. Martin Maldonado offers little to nothing at the plate. He will every once in a blue moon get a couple of extra base hits, get a home run. But he's really known for his defensive skills. What's Christian Vasquez known for? His offensive skills. So now you're adding an offensive player to your system, to your lineup that probably fits somewhere in that 6 through 9 range of the batting order. And without question, is very easily an upgrade when it comes to the hitting experience. But on days that you need to have Martin out there for the defensive style, you know how to play him. He didn't really break that much of a bank. Then you go and add another quality reliever in the likes of Will Smith. Will Smith, throughout the postseason with the Atlanta Braves, was phenomenal. He allowed 3 total hits and not a single run on the way to a championship. Also, you gave up Jake Odorizzi, who was the weakest of your starting pitchers, and you didn't have to lose a guy like Jose Urquidy, who, in my opinion, really should not be on the trading block to begin with unless it's for a player such as Juan Soto. Speaking of Juan Soto, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how today unfolds with his future. The days are numbered for him in Washington. I think that we all can admit that. The question is, will Washington wait until the end of the year to send him packing, or do they get the right deal later this afternoon and either ship him out to San Diego or St. Louis? The other thing I will keep a very close eye on, say the St. Louis Cardinals win the Juan Soto deal. Say St. Louis gets everything that they're looking for. AJ Preller is not going to stop there. AJ Preller is going to make sure that they add at least another bat in the outfield. I would be keeping a very, very, very close eye on Ian Happ of the Chicago Cubs. When you look at Happ and what he brings to the table, he's a very balanced player. He can play in center. He can play in left. He probably could play in right. He's really not known for being a right fielder. It's more so center and left field. But he's also done a very good job at the plate, hitting in that two-hole, that three-hole. Got a good balance, got a good consistency. Right now, he has a 0.679 OPS. Done a very good job offensively. And there's also a report that there could be a package deal in place for Ian Happ and Wilson Contreras of the Chicago Cubs. You'd have to give up a little bit more for Wilson Contreras, but again, you look at what San Diego's trying to do. They're trying to solidify its status as the long-term contenders in the NL West opposite of the Los Angeles Dodgers. You're going to have to add a few more bats. You maybe are going to have to add in another pitcher. I love the Josh Hader move. I mean, Hader, in my opinion, without question, is the clear-cut best closer in baseball, and there really isn't a second. But if you add them in, maybe with a deal with CJ Krohn or like a Robert Hassel and 2 quality starting pitching, you can see it get done. Another player I'm really interested to see who ends up somewhere is Carlos Rodon of the San Francisco Giants. He's got the player option deal, so he is probably going to get moved if San Francisco is serious about starting its rebuild and fire sailing some of the players that they don't expect to be back. St. Louis would make a lot of sense for him. I think San Diego would make a lot of sense for him. I think the Dodgers, if they really want to add a back-end pitcher, would make a lot of sense for them. Same with the Houston Astros. But he may be the biggest ticket item, not of the main stars, moved later this afternoon. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
Well, it's that part of the show, Cole's Calendar, where we break down the national holiday found every single day, and we pick one, only one option. Michael, what are our options for Tuesday, August 2nd, 2022?
We have five of them today.
Woo! I get to put them in order.
First one, take a penny, leave a penny day.
No, I hate those ones. Like you know what those are, right?
That's where you put the little penny. Like if you get a change of penny, just put it there and the little whatever it is. And then if you need it, you could just take one.
Yeah. Why? Like why? And by the way, like you know what's really funny is like do you remember the Amazing Spider-Man with Andrew Garfield?
Of course.
Yeah. Do you remember like the scene where Uncle Ben unfortunately has an Uncle Ben moment? He dies.
Oh, okay.
He dies.
Yeah.
I just don't want to say he was X'd off on air. Like, and how Peter finds him because he was trying to buy milk.
Like, oh, yeah, and the guy steals it and he just tosses it to him.
Yeah, he tosses him the milk. It's funny. Like, every single time that I think of take a penny, leave a penny, I think of that scene because of what happens is, like, Andrew Garfield takes a penny. He's like, hey, man, you have to donate $1.99 to take a penny before you can leave a penny. And it's like, and ever since I've been like, you know what? That's a scam. That's 100% a scam. I don't want to hear it because if you're literally talking about 2 cents of him being off, he's not allowed to take a penny because if he didn't donate enough money, screw you. Screw this. Take a penny, leave a penny. BS. We're done. So that's immediately in fifth place.
Next one.
Immediately, Michael.
National Night Out.
Night Owl or Night Out?
Night Out.
Every night's a night out. Every night should be a night out, Michael. Like, think about this. You come in every morning or every evening at 11 p.m. That's your night out.
Oh, my God.
Every night's a night out. I come in at 1 in the morning. Technically, it's still nighttime. Every night's a night out.
Well, here's the explanation.
Oh, I want to hear this one.
Civilians, organizations, and the Metropolitan Police Department join hands to enhance the relationship between neighborhoods and communities.
So it's like a neighborhood watch thing.
Pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. We need more of that, but we're never going to get it. We're never going to get that.
I think it depends. If you're paying HOA, you're good.
Homeowners Association?
I don't like it.
You don't like it?
No.
Have you dealt with the head of the HOA yet? Have you
neighbored? No, I mean, pain.
I say, come on, Clarence. Let's go see what you have to do. Come on, Clarence, leave me alone. Michael, your grass is too brown right now. Yeah, well, we're in a drought.
I think that exactly.
I think we're fine, Clarence, with me being in the drought right now.
Third one, National CAD Day or CAD Day?
CAB Day, okay. Explain.
The benefit of using computer-aided design over manual drawing.
Nope.
So pretty much like drawing like on an iPad, I'm guessing, or something.
Ooh. I get to draw an iPad because I'm rich enough to afford a pen to be able to draw on an iPad. Do you know how much those pens cost, by the way?
Isn't it like $150?
It's like $110. Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. But hey, CAB Day. Totally. Spent $110 to draw very poorly bad outline stick figures. Right here on Just Saying It.
Hey, some people are talented.
Yeah, I know, but I'm not one of them. I'm not paying $110 for a freaking iPad.
Well,
iPen, not pad.
Well, if you can't do that, today's National Coloring Book Day. Can you color inside the lines?
No.
Oh my God, come on.
No. I do it on purpose. I just scribble. Look at me, I still got it. That's a pretty piece of artwork hanging on the fridge. Then you see your parents look at you with pure disgust and shame. What did I raise? Oh God, this kid's going to end up screwing me over.
I don't mind coloring book. Because, like, my fiance is a teacher. I think it's pre-K or kindergarten at a Montessori school. So I see the coloring book, and there's, like, a sheet around the house, and I'm bored. I just start coloring it.
I'm not going to lie. Adult coloring books on airplanes are awesome. They really are awesome. Like I know somebody who actually is really, really good at like at the shading part. So they come out looking very beautiful. If you are talented enough to do that, by all means, adult coloring books rock.
I like shading.
You
like,
do?
Yeah, shade in, then you get your finger or a paper towel, and you start rubbing it.
See, I've seen that before. You know what I think is really cool? Like when they do the spray paint one. And, like, they use the paper towels, like, to kind of,
make the design.
To make the streaks. Yeah. I think that's really cool.
And National Ice Cream Sandwich Day.
Oh, there we go. That's an easy winner. I hereby decree without question because all the other ones are just cardboard doo-doo. National Ice Cream Sandwich Day. Whether you're a Neapolitan nerd, a vanilla basic Vic guy, or a chocolate chunky, we all love ice cream sandwiches.
Cookies and cream ice cream sandwich.
You like cookies and cream ice cream sandwich?
Yes.
I've never had it.
It's
I need to try
good.
It. You know what's one I really want to try? Cookie dough ice cream sandwich. I feel like that would be pretty good. Like, it's got, like, that kind of cookies and cream style, but it's also got a little bit of that vanilla, a little bit of the chocolate, but just enough of each in, like, chunk form.
Interesting.
I think cookies and cream isn't bad. I just personally think cookie dough may be a tad better.
Nope.
But make sure you stop by somewhere today and pick up your favorite ice cream sandwich. But unfortunately, you can't get the Choco Taco, which, R.I.P.
Overrated.
It is so overrated. You know what's funny? And I saw this, and don't get me wrong, I've had this theory for a while. You only are mad that the Choco Taco's gone because they announced that it's gone. You did not care. Because if you cared, it wouldn't be gone. Like, it still wouldn't exist. I'd understand if, like, it was bringing in, like, $1.2 billion of revenue a year. And then they go, oh, you know what, guys? Take it away. Just get rid of it.
And how much you want to bet that the people that still have it in their freezers are going to sell it for like $40 just for one?
Oh, yeah. Oh, they'll find a way to make it work. You know what it's like? You know when they invented the, like, you know when every single year, they're like, make sure you get your flu vaccine, and then nobody gets it. And it's like, oh, no, I had the flu. Well, you didn't get the flu vaccine. It's the same thing.
Real quick, eBay, Klondike Choco Taco, 30 of them, $300.
The fact that someone is actually going to pay that makes me laugh, I think, more than anything else. You know what else makes me laugh? That right now, in college football, we're willing to give up on certain players because they just don't fit the notion of certain criteria of what they didn't have at their other school. And probably the biggest victim of this has been Bo Nix. 800-224-2004. Bo Nix this past year transferred from Auburn to Oregon. He'll join Dan Lanning and Kenny Dillingham with the chance to potentially keep the Ducks afloat and remain a contender in the Pac-12. Why do I think that Bo Nix actually can work for the likes of Oregon? Well, number one, he's working with Kenny Dillingham. If you go back and look at Bo Nix's first season coming out of high school, there was a lot of potential for him. I mean, a lot of potential. Because of the reality factor was, when you look at what he had during his time at Auburn, he was no better than his freshman year. He had over 2,500 passing yards, 16 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, and a passer rating of 125. His offense coordinator that year, Kenny Dillingham. There's a trust factor. There's an elemental process that goes into coordinator and quarterback. If you find the coach that you really work with, you're going to get massive results. It happened at Oklahoma. Look at Lincoln Riley and look at Caleb Williams. They head out to USC. They're going to keep the tandem together. One of the more underrated duos in college football is Jamie Chadwell and Grayson McCall at Coastal Carolina. The last 2 years, they have been on fire in the South Carolina region. And Grayson McCall had multiple offers to leave the program and go to a Power 5 school. Instead, he stays put because of Jamie Chadwell. Going out to Texas, you look at Steve Sarkisian. One of the main reasons why people believe that he is going to be able to turn the ship around in 2022 is because of Quinn Ewers wanted to play with Steve Sarkisian. Just like Arch Manning wants to commit to Texas because of Steve Sarkisian. It's not because of Texas, it's because of the coach. Kenny Dillingham got the best play out of Bo Nix and the most consistent play out of Bo Nix. So you add him to Oregon's locker room, it's already a tandem that works. Number two, I think that the offensive line is going to be a lot better for Oregon than it was at Auburn. Auburn did not have a bad offensive line. You move that offensive line to the West Coast, they're probably a top five unit. But unfortunately, in the SEC, when you're going up against defensive lines such as Alabama, such as Texas A&M, such as Tennessee, such as Arkansas, you're going to have a little bit of regression if you're not completely on point. And that kind of is where Auburn was. They weren't a bad offensive line. They weren't a great offensive line. They were middle of the tier. For a quarterback like Bo Nix that can maneuver outside the pocket, but you don't want him usually running that hard. I mean, the guy averaged 2.9 rushing yards last season. There's a reason that you probably need better protection. In Oregon, the offensive line is returning four starters from last year, and all of them are very capable of playing at the next level. So it's a very good offensive line for a quarterback that probably needs that extra protection. The last thing that I love for Bo Nix is that he has played at the biggest and most poignant level of college football. He played in the SEC for 3 years, and he wasn't terrible. He wasn't a superstar. He didn't live up to the expectations that were set because of his father and because of the Nix legacy inside of Auburn, Alabama. But he did play up to some bit of a standard. Just a little bit. And that's a challenging schedule. Keep in mind that every single year, Auburn got the short end of the stick. They play Georgia as one of their other conference rival games. And they play Alabama at the end of the season. Usually when Auburn is worn down. Look at the schedule this year for Oregon. They play at home against Eastern Washington. They play BYU on the road at Washington State, at home against Stanford, on the road against Arizona, at home against UCLA, on the road against Cal, on the road against Colorado, at home against Washington, at home against Utah, on the road at Oregon State. Oregon State should be a win. Colorado should be a win. Cal should be a win. Arizona should be a win. Washington State should be a win. And I think if I'm not mistaken, it's a home-v-home series. So the game against Georgia week one is probably a loss. But besides that, very easy wins. Very balanced schedule. Very overall public praise demeanor for Bo Nix. He absolutely can work in the Pac-12. It's an easier conference, number one. He's played at a certain standard in the SEC, number two. And number three, he's worked with Kenny Dillingham. So there's a success and a trust factor that is missing with certain players, with certain coordinators, with certain quarterbacks. You don't need to worry about that in Eugene, Oregon. They have that, and then some. So I actually really think that Bo Nix is going to hit. And I do think that if Oregon can get the best out of Bo Nix, they're not going to miss a beat. They're still going to be hanging around. They're still going to be in the conversation to win the Pac-12 title. There's question marks at UCLA. There's question marks at Oregon. There's question marks at USC. There's certainly question marks at Utah. But you look as a whole, Oregon has been one of the more consistent teams regardless of their coach. Mario Cristobal, Chip Kelly, Willie Taggart, Mark Herflick, they've had success with their roster regardless of who was at the helm. It's because of solid quarterback play and solid offensive line play. They potentially have both going into 2022. Before we close out real fast, I want to talk about another quarterback battle, Texas A&M. Right now, we're trying to figure out, are the Aggies a viable contender to win in the SEC? I actually believe they are, because they do have a very solid roster. They added in the number one recruiting class. The weaponry this year, with Anaya Smith and new receiver Evan Stewart and guys like Moose Muhammad and Chase Lane, they've all worked extremely well in this offense with Jimbo Fisher. But the reality factor is one of the major reasons that Texas A&M has struggled is because they haven't found a consistent QB number one. I look at a guy like Zach Calzada. He never was going to live up to the standard. Yes, he'll always have the Alabama game to hold his hat on, but he doesn't live up to the standard. All three quarterbacks currently on the roster for Texas A&M could easily be a starter. And they could be a starter and very successful. Haynes King adds a dual threat element and has a very good arm that works downfield. Max Johnson, the transfer from LSU, is about as consistent as they come. And you look at a guy like Connor Wengman, the player that they added from Bridgeland, Texas, there's an opportunity that he could be the one with the most upside. But I look right now at this roster, as long as one of these quarterbacks plays up to a certain standard and doesn't have the turnover errors and the decision-making isn't that bad, there's potential for A&M to finish better than 10-2. We're like 11-1. And 11-1 puts you in that conversation to make not only the SEC championship, but the college football playoff. We'll close out just saying it right after this.
This is Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
One final thought, as I do every day here on Just Saying It. Memories last forever and legends never die. Trey Mancini will for always be synonymously remembered for his battle with colon cancer as a member of the Baltimore Orioles. But he also will be remembered for two major moments in his time during his seasons at Camden Yards. In his very first at-bat, he hit a home run out of the actual ballpark, making him the next big name in Baltimore. And in his final at-bat at Camden Yards, thanks to a misjudgment based off of a fly ball against Tampa Bay Rays, he closes out his career with an inside-the-park home run. In both instances, he gave a curtain call, tipped his hat to the fans, and said thank you for the memories. Welcome to Houston, Trey Mancini, and best of luck to you moving forward. That does it for me right here on Just Saying It. I'll be back tomorrow to break down more MLB trade deadline, NFL news, and so much more. Have a good Tuesday. Later!